Homage to the blessed, noble, and fully self-awakened one. So may we all sit in meditation and set our hearts on listening to the Dhamma, establishing mindfulness well in the present moment, and bringing up the feeling that the Buddha himself is sitting right in front of us. And we set our hearts on listening to the Dhamma of the Buddha. We don't send our minds out anywhere else, but we set our minds on firstly listening to the Dhamma. If our mind is wavering, thinking about this and that, then we're not able to see the Dhamma. This is the mind that's not inclining itself to the Dhamma, to contemplating the Dhamma. So we can think back like the Buddha's first teaching, Venerable Anya Kondanya, he set his heart on listening to the Dhamma because he saw that he was old already and he had a lot of confidence in the Buddha. And so the Buddha spoke a particular utterance that, have you ever heard me say that Tathagata is rightly self-awakened already? Have you heard that before? And the group of five ascetics who had been attending on the Buddha to be for some time, they had never heard that particular utterance before. They had not heard that speech. And so this was a utterance of the Buddha that was true. And so Venerable Anya Kondanya set his heart on listening to the teachings, listening to the teaching that everything which is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. So the Buddha gave a short teaching. Venerable Anya Kondanya contemplated following this teaching, following the Dhamma, and his mind accepted this teaching. He had samadhi and wisdom already. His mind gathered together, was able to see the truth, able to see the Dhamma. Because Venerable Anya Kondanya, he had already done a lot of contemplation, a lot of bhavana, a lot of mental cultivation, and he had achieved very high levels of samadhi already. It was simply that he was not able to understand the truth, not able to understand it on his own. He needed to listen to the teachings from a Buddha. And that left the remainder of the group of five ascetics, the remaining four, Venerable Wappa, Venerable Badiya, Venerable Mahanama, Venerable Asaji. These four were not able to see the Dhamma in this first discourse. So why is that? Because they weren't sufficiently intent to listen. They didn't incline their minds to the teachings of the Buddha. Their faith was not yet ready. But Venerable Anya Kondanya, he was old already. And so he had seen the Dhamma in that occasion. And he told the others that he had seen the Dhamma already. And so after that point, these four Brahmins became very intent to listen. So on the second day, then one more of the group was able to see the Dhamma, Venerable Wappa. And on one more day, yet another member was able to see the Dhamma. So then in this manner, Venerable Mahanama, Venerable Badiya, Venerable Asaji, they were all able to see the Dhamma because they had this firm intent to listen to the Dhamma. And so we see that listening to the Dhamma well gives rise to wisdom. So this is a principle or path of practice that is important. Like for myself, listening to the teachings from Venerable Ajahn Chah, I'd feel this feelings of fullness of heart, happiness, and rapture. And this leads the mind to develop quickly. It reduces doubts with regard to the practice. Because there are many methods And so practicing like this, it helps incline our mind to the correct path, to bring our mind to not liking, not disliking, bringing the mind to having joy in the practice. Like walking to and fro on walking meditation, the mind and body feeling very light and at ease. And I was contemplating like this, and Lumpu Cha, Venerable Ajahn Chah gave a teaching about the way of practice that is never wrong, how to train the mind, that if we have attraction or liking arise, have disliking or aversion arise, and we contemplate right there so that the mind doesn't chase after these moods. To bring the mind to not falling into attraction and aversion. So if we have attraction and aversion already, then we contemplate and bring the mind to the middle, to the correct path of practice. So practicing like this, then our doubts in the teachings of the great masters, see that there's many different teachings, but we study, we listen, our faith increases, our doubts decrease. Because we see that all the great masters, they teach the same path, this path of sila, samadhi, and panya, of virtue, collectedness, and wisdom. We may also study the teachings or the discourse on the four foundations of mindfulness, for example, and cultivating these four foundations of mindfulness to make mindfulness continuous. And reading this teaching, we see that it's taught that practicing continuously in this way, one can at least realize to the level of stream enterer, or once returner, or non-returner, or if the parami is full, then to arahantship, full awakening. And this is for sure, for certain. So reading this already, we can feel very touched deeply by this teaching. So then we come to practice it. So in the beginning, we can feel very hot-headed about this, very wanting things quickly, wanting to rush to get to the end result. So we come to contemplate the body, to know the body. And there are many ways to do this. For instance, we know the breath as it comes in and out. This is one type of bodily mindfulness, Gaya Nupassana. Knowing the body. We contemplate the 32 parts of the body. It's another way to know the body. We have mindfulness with the four postures of sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. So we know them. We know the posture that the body is in. This is another way to know the body. Or we look at the corpse, the body that's died already, no longer has the breath coming in and out. It's died. It starts to decompose. And so this is another way to know the body. We call it the 10 asubha recollections. Asubha meaning that which is not beautiful. So we have mindfulness with the body, with vedana, feeling tone, the citta, mind states, and dhammas. So speaking about a subtler, more subtle level of body contemplation, so we see that we sit down. Some individuals are proficient with knowing the breath, reciting Bhutto. Some like to contemplate the body with the 32 parts, to see them as not beautiful. Because the mind habitually is attracted to or likes the body, thinking that it's beautiful, thinking that the hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin, for instance, are beautiful. Thinking that the heart, the lungs, and so on, the internal organs are beautiful, but we don't really see them. So we contemplate to see them as not beautiful. So this is one type, one aspect. Or knowing with mindfulness, the sitting, the standing, walking and lying down, knowing the body as it moves. So the body moves, so we move the body not too quickly, not too slowly, but just right. And we just know it. We have knowing with the body, or knowing these five parts, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin, or knowing the inner organs like heart, lungs, intestines, liver, spleen, bones. So we can contemplate the body like this. So we have to understand that when we contemplate the body, we can contemplate in terms of the five parts. Again, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. And when we contemplate already, then we can begin to see one part more clearly. We see it more clearly in the mind. And then we can just contemplate just that one part a lot. Just focus on that one part to bring the mind to peace and collectedness, to samadhi. So this is important. So this is an important point to understand. Because in the beginning, the mind is not stable, it's wavering a lot. So we meditate with these five parts, like gesa, loma, naka, danta, tacho, tacho, danta, naka, loma, gesa, which are the Pali words for hair of the head and hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. And we repeat that in forwards and backwards order. And so when our mind becomes peaceful already like this, we can have a clear image of one of these parts arise in the mind, what we call a nimitta. So it's possible for that to happen. Or we can keep meditating onward to five more parts, five different parts, like contemplating the heart, the lungs, the liver, intestines, the bones, undigested food, feces, the brain, the bone marrow, or these different liquid elements like blood, lymph, oil of the joints, saliva, tears, sweat, and so on. So we contemplate like this. So we repeat these meditation words and meditate, repeating them in backwards and forwards order. So we might have a lot of thinking, a lot of distractedness of mind. So we contemplate in that case. We contemplate, well, is the hair really beautiful? Is it really me and mine? Is it really self? So we see, how does hair arise? Well, it comes out of the skin, and it's nurtured by the blood, by the nutrients carried by the blood and the body, and then it grows. And then the hair changes. It can start out as black, but then it gradually changes to white, then it degrades and falls apart and decomposes. So once it's time is up, its age, lifespan is up, then it changes. So you see, is it really beautiful? Is it really something clean? If we just look at it with our eyes, we might think that it's beautiful. So this is what's known as the defilements training the mind. The defilements have been training the mind for a long time already. So we have to work to cure this issue, to contemplate, to see it as not beautiful. For instance, if we have a glass of drinking water, we're able to drink it. But if we put some hair into that water, we might start to see some oil, some hair oil floating on top of the water. Then that water is no longer appealing. It's disgusting to us. We might think of some food, very expensive, nice-looking food, very high quality. But then if that food touches some skin or contacts the body in some way, then we no longer see it as beautiful or appealing. Or if we chew that food and that food gets mixed up with our saliva, that food is no longer beautiful and appealing anymore. So these are just some examples. So we can contemplate hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. For instance, looking at teeth, So we might consider the teeth to be beautiful, but we look at them, they're just bones coming out of the body. We might feel like white teeth are nice or attractive, but then we contemplate that the drawbacks of them, that they can become very painful. When there's problems with the teeth, it can be very torturous, very painful, and suffering like that. So we see them just as bones, bones that are visible. And so Lumpu Cha would teach like this, to be careful, to see the drawbacks in them. Or Venerable Ajahn Chah would also teach about, or some people might find that seeing red or rosy cheeks to be attractive, but he would teach that, well, this is really just the blood, it's just seeing the blood. So not to get lost in that, not to be deluded by that, but it's just blood. If we remove the skin from the body, then it's just all red everywhere. So like sitting here, all of us, all the monastics, all the laity, if none of us had skin, then it'd just be red everywhere. It wouldn't be beautiful. So this is one example. So we contemplate again, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin, to see them as not beautiful, to see them as a subha. Practicing like this, the mind becomes peaceful and collected in samadhi. So it starts out as the wisdom of thinking. This is how it begins. We don't yet see clearly. But we use thinking in this way to make the mind feel more at ease, to reduce the level of liking and attraction towards the body, towards one's own body, towards others' bodies, to make that less. Because we see that when the mind has desire, has liking, has attraction, this is a fire in the mind. The mind is hot and agitated. It's on fire with greed, with aversion, with delusion. If the mind has a lot of liking and attraction, then the mind has a lot of heat, a lot of fire. So what do we do then? We train the mind, we contemplate. We contemplate to bring the mind to ease and peace. If contemplating the body is something difficult for us, it's hard for us to see clearly, then we can look at the body that's dead already, that started to decompose already. The liquids ooze out of the body, the maggots and insects come to eat the body. So we see it really is not beautiful in truth. So this is these are some examples. So sometimes our imagination may create images about oneself or others that are very beautiful. Like in the time of the Buddha, there was Lady Sirima, and she was old already, and she was giving alms to a monk. And this monk thought that, well, she's old now and she's still beautiful. So before, when she was younger, she must have been even more beautiful. And this monk had a very high level of samadhi. So he had this imagination arise, this image in his mind arise, this nimitta arise in his mind. Then his samadhi was gone. He was lost in this image, in this clear nimitta in his mind. And it was to the point where he didn't want to eat his food at all. He had such attraction to this nimitta, this image in his mind, of this image where he thought Lady Sirima was so beautiful. And it just so happened that at that time Lady Sirima died, and the Buddha said not to burn her body, not to destroy the corpse. But he invited all the monks to come contemplate her body there. And so the monks came, and the Buddha taught to see the not beautiful nature of the body. And he made an announcement that, is there anyone who wants Lady Sirima's body now? So there was a price named of a great deal of money, let's say 10 million baht. and no one wanted her body for that price. And the amount kept reducing and reducing to a very small amount, and still no one wanted the body for that amount. There was no amount for which anyone wanted to have that body. So we see that there was no value anymore. There was no beauty in it. So in the beginning, this monk didn't know that she had died already. And so when he heard that there was some event where she would be there, where Lady Sirima would be there, he was very happy hearing this, that he could meet with her. So he was very happy and excited, put on his robe and got ready to go to this event. But then seeing that she had died already, he started to feel sangvega, this dispassion, this disinclination towards the things of the world, that her body had died already. And so during this event, he was able to realize arahantship, full awakening. So he went from being very deluded, very lost. Then we see that he had a lot of wisdom already, and with the loving kindness and compassion of the Buddha, he was able to attain to full awakening, to arahantship. So we see that this contemplation of the body can lead the mind to realizing stream entry, one's returnship, non-returnship, and arahantship, full awakening. So contemplating the body and its various parts, like hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin, and backwards and forwards order. If the mind's not yet peaceful doing this, and we contemplate the heart, the lungs, the intestines, the bones, and so on. We can look at the lungs, for instance. The lungs are working constantly, and later on they change. The lungs can go from red to black. They change like this. With the in-breath, the lungs expand. With the out-breath, the lungs contract. So we have mindfulness to know this, to know the movement of the body. So we contemplate in this way, contemplate these various parts. So whatever part we feel some proficiency or affinity for, like the skeleton, we can contemplate the right there, like contemplating the skeleton, seeing that the bones turn from different colors, like from brown to white, it degrades. So we see the skeleton, we see, is this really me and mine? Is this really self? Because it decomposes, it degrades, it falls apart, all these various parts. So we see it as not self. So in the beginning, we see like this, we see more and more clearly. And mindfulness, or samadhi, arises. Samadhi, this firm collectedness of mind. And wisdom arises. So first it's the wisdom of thinking, and then it becomes the wisdom of meditation, becomes more clear. We see the body is not beautiful. And when we see this, the mind becomes more beautiful, more bright and radiant. We don't have fear, we see the truth. Like some monks go to practice in the cremation ground, seeing the skeletons all about, and there might be some fear arising. The monk feels fear. And why is this? Because the monk fears death. So the monk fears death, and this fear arises. The monk might recite Bhutto a lot, and be with the breath, and contemplate the body. And like this, the mind can gather together. Wisdom arises. The monk sees that life is unsure. That having died, then one's own body becomes a skeleton like that, just the same. One has the skeleton all the same. In this way, the mind becomes joyful and radiant. So sitting and walking in the cremation ground, the mind is joyful and bright. The skeletons are there, but there's nothing to fear. There's nothing to it. We see that our life is just this much. So Dhamma understanding arises, that all conditioned formations are impermanent, they don't last, they're unsure, they're impermanent, stressful, and not self. So when a clear vision, like a nimitta, arises like this, this is able to control the defilements. So when the kilesas are stronger and more sort of more prominent, then it's their nature that they win over the magga, over the path. So we have to contemplate, have patient endurance. We see that it's just like this. When the path qualities are stronger, then they win. The path wins over the defilements. When the defilements are stronger, then the defilements kill the path or win over the path. So they alternate back and forth like this. We keep practicing, the mind gets better, the mind improves. The level of attraction towards sights, sounds, tastes, smells, touch and mind objects decreases. The mind has less attraction for them. The mind improves. The mind is more restrained. So the mind is contained within the boundaries of virtue, whether the five precepts or the eight precepts. The mind can start to feel samvega, this dispassion, disenchantment. So the mind starts to understand and see the Dhamma. So we need to have effort and perseverance to think, to contemplate, to see material form as not beautiful, not attractive, because this is the truth, this is the reality. So when we see things, see them as beautiful, this is not correct. But if we see things, or see the body, see material objects, and we have aversion, dislike, or hatred, this is also not correct. Because when we have attraction and liking, we contemplate asubha, the not beautiful, this brings the mind to feeling full and happy, content. It's not meant to bring the mind to aversion. So if the mind falls into aversion, to disliking, to hatred, and so on, this is not correct. The mind might start to feel weary and tired of material things, or tired of the body, you just want to die. And so the Buddha forbade this type of practice. The Buddha said not to practice this way, he forbade it. So this is seeing the not beautiful aspect too much. So the mind, when it goes this way, feels weary of the body, feels tired of it or sick of it. The mind doesn't want to live here, live in this body. It feels like why should the mind live here? So the Buddha forbade practicing like this, taught to bring the mind back to the present. We're not practicing to make the mind depressed or feel sad. But we're practicing to have mindfulness. Or like now we're practicing as a group, practicing to cultivate mindfulness. And sometimes we want to go practice alone, to meditate alone. And if we have a fullness of heart, if we have rapture, then we're able to do this without any worries, because rapture is caring for the mind. But if we don't have fullness and rapture, and we're practicing alone, we can start to feel lonely, we can start to feel depressed. So we have to be careful about this, particularly for sincere practitioners of Dhamma. But don't be afraid of these mind states, but train mindfulness to be strong and brave. So whatever mind states arise, then contemplate right there. Whether it's a mind state of happiness or pleasure, or a mind state of suffering or pain. So sometimes it's like that. So see that it's impermanent, it's uncertain, to contemplate the body, to bring the mind to this firm collectedness, to samadhi. So when samadhi is well established, we see that the body's not beautiful. We see it's merely composed of natural elements of earth, air, fire, and water. It degrades, it decomposes, it's empty. So we give rise to clear understanding of this. So the Buddha taught like this, to practice like this, to understand and see the Dhamma clearly. This gives rise to confidence in oneself, that all these different doubts that one's been afflicted by for many months, for many years, ever since the beginning, these doubts fade away. There's no doubts left anymore. The mind's joyful and happy and full, has samadhi, has peacefulness, and we can sit and walk meditation all day. We're not weary of it, because rapture is caring for the heart. It has this kind of characteristic. So in the beginning, sometimes we're peaceful, sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're successful, sometimes we're not. So have patient endurance, contemplate a lot. In the end, you'll be able to know the Dhamma and see the Dhamma, and see that everything in this world, it's all impermanent, it's all stressful, it's all not self. And everything is changing, everything's impermanent, that all must die. So seeing this, that we see the Dhamma, the mind then changes from a beautiful being to a noble being. So all of you are able to change like this. Your mind is changing already, gradually, bit by bit, to more brightness, more joy. So may you continue on this path, cultivating the wholesome, abandoning the unwholesome, making the mind bright and radiant. May you all grow in Dhamma and see the true Buddha. May you grow in blessings.